First Baptist Church of Redmond, October 18th, 2009. Missionaries Pat and Kelly Melson.
Hey, there I am. Here's the rest of the family. We have two daughters in college. They're seniors this year, should be graduating, and we don't know if they're going to be graduating from singlehood to marriedhood or not. You know, we don't know that yet, but it's a good chance for one of them. Rachel's in the black on the outside, and Naomi's in the blue, and they can't be with us because they're having to suffer with Pennsylvania weather right now and being in Bible college. But we shared in Sunday school a little bit about our ministry, where we're in Papua New Guinea, second largest island in the world, right above Australia. It's a tropical island, but we live in the middle of the mountains, in the middle of the country, 5,000 feet up, so we don't have the humidity from the coast, but we do have 75-degree year weather, 75-degree weather year-round, and it's pretty nice. So after I teach in the Bible college, typically I go put shorts on for the rest of the day, you know, and that's kind of our existence there. Some of you who are here in Sunday school, I want to run through this real quick. Top 10 indicators you may be a veteran missionary. We've been over there for three terms. We arrived in 1995. So these are the top 10 signs you might be a veteran missionary. And number 10 is you can't answer the question, where are you from? Are we from Papua New Guinea? Well, sort of, but I don't look like I belong over there. Am I from America? Yes, but not anymore. We live in Papua New Guinea. So where are you from? It's a different question for a missionary. Number 9, you haggle with the checkout clerk for the best price. Yeah, that'd be great here. Number 8, you have a time zone map next to your phone, so you know what time it is. We're 17 hours ahead in Papua New Guinea. So if we want to know what's going to happen today, we just call our friends over there and we ask them, what's going to happen today? And they'll tell us because they're ahead of us. 7, you speak with authority on the subject of airline travel. Now, we travel by airplane. You can't even get to Papua New Guinea, the city in Goroka, by car from the capital. So we have to actually fly to the capital and then fly into the city of Goroka where we live. So it's always interesting to travel. And with airlines in Papua New Guinea, you never know for certain if you're going to make it to your destination because there may be a cancellation, and that has happened a bunch as we've traveled. You can cut grass with a machete, but you can't start a lawnmower. That may be a sign that you're a missionary. You don't have a lawnmower, but you have a machete. And we came back and had to do some lawn work in the house, and we went downstairs, and my daughter Abby was with me, and they had a machete, so that's what I went to go out and trim around the bushes and stuff. Number 5, you refer to gravel roads as highways. Now, we have heard they're paving the road in front of our Bible college, which is about 3 miles to town. Now, that drive can take typically about 15 minutes when it's a paved road or when they've graded it. You can do it in 5 minutes if nobody's on the road. So it makes a difference, the kinds of roads that you have. Number 4, you watch a nature documentary and you think how good that animal would taste if it were fried. So most people in Papua New Guinea don't have meat on a regular basis. So if a family in Papua New Guinea has a chicken once a week, that's like a serious big blessing to them, a big heavy thing. So for them to see some of these big animals that are in Africa and other countries, it does make them hungry. Number 3, fitting 20 or more people into a car seems normal to you. Now, they'll hold as many people as you will allow to get into them, and that's what happens in Papua New Guinea. Number 2, you marvel at the cleanliness of gas station bathrooms. And the number one indicator you may be a missionary is this. You read a National Geographic and you recognize someone. Now, that hasn't happened to us, but I think the day's probably coming when something similar to this is gonna happen. We've seen nature documentaries and other things on, like, the Travel Channel and other things, and we've seen some things on Papua New Guinea and places where we've been. So it's kind of interesting how small the world has become. You can find out so much more about the world. We work at the Bible College. I'm the headmaster of the school, the director of the school, as well as a teacher. I went primarily to teach, and God said, no, I want you to do administration as well. And our main task is helping churches train workers for the gospel ministry. We kind of shared that in the Sunday school hour, but I want to focus a little bit in Scripture and think about the idea of how are you involved in missions. Now, we're missionaries supported by First Baptist Church here, so you're involved obviously in financial and prayer support, but I want to challenge you a little bit more than just that, and I want to look in the book of Matthew. So if you have your Bibles, let's turn to Matthew chapter 9. And a lot of times missionaries speak about the Great Commission, which is the end of the book of Matthew. And it talks about the commission Christ gave His disciples to go into all the world and make disciples and to teach people to obey whatever Christ has commanded, and also to baptize them if they have not been baptized. But in Matthew 9, we have a little bit of a summary and just a few verses of looking at Jesus' ministry in the context of verses immediately preceding and even afterwards. We see Jesus ministering in, and we almost have what's a summary statement here in verse 35. And in answering this question, what was Jesus like? Let's just read these verses in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 35, and we'll read just a few verses down. And this summarizes Jesus' ministry and how He looked at things. It says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When He saw the crowds, He had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then He said to His disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into His harvest field. And I just have a few things we want to talk about from this passage and thinking about what was Jesus like. In the middle of this ministry, He had His disciples with Him. He had the crowds. He had lots of people. And in all these towns and villages, and it reminds us of Papua New Guinea with all the little towns and villages all over the place. Goroka is the capital of the Eastern Highlands province. So we live close to the big town. We're 3 miles outside of it. The big town of 35,000 people. That's a big town, Papua New Guinea. It's the fifth largest city in the country. So most people live out in the villages. So when I read a passage like this, Jesus down in the towns and villages, that kind of itinerant ministry, you know, we get a picture of His concerns. He was where most of the people lived. And how did Jesus see the world? When we look at this passage, there's a few points I just want to bring out from this passage to think about how Jesus saw the world and how that was different than His disciples. He saw the world in terms of harvest. There was a harvest field out there. When He looked on the crowds and He looked at all the people, He saw them as people, yes, but He saw it also as a spiritual harvest. He was essentially looking with spiritual eyes out at the people around Him. And in doing this, He was seeing the world really differently as most of us do and as His disciples did. We were talking with some friends who were talking about being in the Northwest and what it's like. And, you know, we have I-5, this great corridor, and they've widened it out in a few places, we've noticed. But still, if you live in the Northwest, you work however many hours, plus spend, you know, at least 10 hours a week in the car, probably, because you're on the highway and on the roads. And we think of those people in those cars as, you know, they're on my highway, they're in my way, they're driving crazy, you know, they're annoying me, they're cutting me off. We tend to think in some of those terms sometimes. Or we see when there's a big crowd someplace, you know, how it just messes with our life and how slow it is. And, you know, we sometimes don't like to be out where those big crowds are. Now, driving on the freeways in America is tough from driving in Papua New Guinea. So we have to learn how to do that. Not only do Americans drive on the wrong side of the road compared to Papua New Guinea, or you're American, you might say, we drive on the wrong side of the road. You have to get used to that, and you should ask my girls about some different stories about me remembering which side of the road I'm supposed to be on at times. They have a few stories they could tell you. But we've been here long enough. It's perfectly safe when you're leaving the church. You don't have to look and see where the Melsons are because we might be driving on the wrong lane. We've got that figured out now. But all the people, you know, what are they? Are they a nuisance? Are they a problem? You know, when you're in the grocery store or you're in Walmart. Yeah, in Walmart. We wish they were Walmarts of Papua New Guinea. How do you get into the to the right line to avoid all those people, you know. So, you know, and you're looking, you do it like I do too. You look at everybody's carts and see, well, you know, they've got a lot of stuff. I'm going to go get in the short line. And there's a guy with 25 items and it's the 20 line. You know, that's not right. We tend to look at people as nuisances and inconvenience, and Christ looked at them as a harvest, a spiritual harvest needing to be harvested. He was going around ministering. His disciples were with him, but this is how he saw them. There's a harvest needs there. And a harvest is something that will spoil if you don't take it. There's a need. There's a this impression from Christ's words and how he viewed it that there's something to be done right now, right this instant. And the time that we have to do this is right now. When the harvest is ripe, you got to pick it. He also saw the needs of the crowds. I mean, he looked at the crowds and he saw them this way, but the whole context as well is talking about individual needs that Jesus met, but also the needs of the crowds. I mean, this vast throng, as he sees it, and the spiritual harvest, it moved him. He's talked about in different places and parallel passages that are similar with this kind of concept, where Jesus looking at the crowds speak about him having compassion, as it does in this passage. In verse 36, it says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. You know, and driving up here, you know, I was in the lane, you know, and when people are starting to box you in and you get kind of stuck in traffic, you know, we tend to think of those terms of what I need to do, where I need to go, and Christ is looking on the people with compassion. And this has been a challenge to me as a missionary that I need to look at people the way Christ looks at people, to have compassion on them. And those large crowds sometimes get me. Because I'm thinking, how does Christ see these large crowds? You know, when I think of the freeway network that's here in the Northwest, and I think, how many people does that support? There's a lot of people in there that have needs, spiritual needs. Not just wide because there's a lot of people, but on the individual level. And Christ saw that, the needs of the crowds. He saw that this need as well, the need for his own followers to see people as he did. Now we think in other passages in Jesus, like when he was with the women at the well in Samaria, his disciples are kind of like, well, what are you doing with this woman? You know, and he's looking at it from a perspective of, there's a ministry here, there's a work here that needs to be done, and you as my disciples need to be like me, you need to follow me, you need to see people as I see them. Now, the disciples in this day were, you know, they would go about the master's business and they would attend to Jesus and they would be a part of the ministry. But Christ's focus was out there where those needs were. And his followers had to have that same kind of eyesight, that same kind of vision. And this is one of the things he's trying to get his disciples to see. When he said to his disciples, verse 37, look around us, this harvest is plentiful. But the laborers are few. Don't you guys see this? I'm ministering to these guys, but look, it's ready right now for the spiritual ministry. Don't you see that? Aren't your eyes open to that? And the challenge was for these guys to change their vision, to start seeing as Christ saw. And with that was the need to pray. Look at this great work that needs to be done. And he says, well, there's not enough workers. And the answer is pray. Pray that the Lord of the harvest will send forth more workers into his harvest fields. You know, we have a tremendous need for more missionaries in Papua New Guinea. Now, every missionary that gets up here will tell you that. There's a need for more missionaries. And first and foremost, we need to pray for more missionaries. We need to do that, and Christ draws that attention of his disciples to that point of praying. And I have no doubt that they had a prayer meeting after this incident right here. And, you know, Lord, let's send some people out to this harvest. Send some workers out. And Romans, Paul tells us that in chapter 10, that they don't go unless somebody sends them. And the church sends missionaries out. You guys do send missionaries out. And the Lord sent us out to Papua New Guinea through you guys and a bunch of other churches. And we're doing that work and we're taking that on. But we need to make sure that we go back to this idea of praying that the Lord would send more. There's a need for more workers in Papua New Guinea. Many different needs there. And we would like to focus some of our attention for more laborers in the areas of carpenters and business administrators, You guys who knows how to work on computers, is there anybody that knows how to work on the computers in the Northwest? No, nobody here? Okay. You know, Pastor could put together a website here, and he got all that figured out. Maybe Pastor, forget Romania, come over to Papua New Guinea with us. We need guys to teach at our Bible school. We've been asked by our national leaders and our churches to start more programs at our Bible school. We have good programs, but they want a Christian ed program, a music program, a youth program, a women's and children's program more developed. They would like us to add some more classes in the areas of construction and other life skills that could help them, especially since they got to build churches. We need almost any kind of thing you could do in the States. You know, you have those kinds of needs on the mission field. So there's a need for more laborers and many, many different kinds. Do you know this guy? He was a millionaire back like about 100 years ago, right? Because that's what the picture looks like, right? That haircut's like about a turn of the century kind of guy. William Borden of Yale gave up his millions to go to the mission field. Now, I don't know if any of you have millions to give up to go to the mission field, but you could do that. You know, I'm inviting you to do that. He said, talking about the need for more missionaries, he says, if 10 men are carrying a log, 9 of them on the little end and 1 at the heavy end, and you want to help, which end will you go on? Now, if we look at the number of resources we have in America, not just money, but the personnel that we have available to work in the ministry in America, it's huge. If we look at the needs around the world, that's the one. The needs are out there. You know, they're not going to hear any other way except through a missionary, except somebody go to tell them. Somebody who knows has to go tell those who don't know. And 100 years ago, you know, this was true, and it's still true today, that there's a large need outside of our country. And go help on the end where the guy's all by himself over there. And we've kind of felt that way this last term with different changes on our field, and my wife's going to share a little bit about that later. You know this guy? Oswald Smith. Now, he's written some books about missions and some other things. He was a pastor from a few years back, a missionary recruiter. He says, we talk of the second coming, but half the world has never heard of his first. We're going to heaven, and we can sing these great songs about it. There's people out there who don't even know about heaven and don't know that God has provided a way. We ought to be doing something about that, don't you think? We ought to be seeing the world as Christ sees the world. Who's this guy? William Carey, father of modern missions, who as a young man was told when he talked about, you know, can we use means to reach the heathen, or are they just going to, you know, die, or is God going to do something else? And at first the older men around him told him, young man, sit down. If God wants to save the heathen, he's going to do it his way. And yet he encouraged and prayed. And as a teacher, he had developed a world map that he put together himself. And he studied different countries. And he put together a little document, you know, and it has about like 4 sentences in the title of this. You know, the about God using means basically to save the heathen. Would he do that? And, you know, back when he wrote this over 100 years ago, you know, that's how they wrote titles of books, and little pamphlets were like 4 sentences long. But in that, he had lots of statistics and other things. And as he was beginning to try to get his church and the people there to turn their hearts towards the world, he said this. He said, attempt great things for God and expect great things from God. Nobody's over there in India as a foreign missionary, but does God's word talk about those people being lost and about there being a need? And about a need for the church to go out there? Let's attempt to do great things and expect God to answer those attempts. We're doing this in His will to go. He told us to go. We should be going. Let's attempt it, and let's expect God to just bless in incredible ways. And I can tell you the ministry in Papua New Guinea, God has blessed it beyond what our abilities are capable of producing. He's in the business of doing great things. Who's this guy? Anybody know? David Livingstone of Africa. He said this, if a commission by an earthly king is considered an honor, how can a commission by a heavenly king be considered a sacrifice? And he walked into the darkest parts of Africa, and many who followed him gave their lives, but they didn't do it to honor anybody here on this earth. They did it to honor Christ who died for us. Wow. This guy? Aka Indians? Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot said, "Why do you need a voice that is a missionary voice to tell you when you have a verse? Hey, go into all the world. It's here. Let's just obey what God has already given us." Not to say everybody's going to be a foreign missionary. Somebody needs to stay in Redmond, obviously, and do this. I like this next guy here, John Piper. He says, "Go, send, or disobey." Those are your options as Christians. To be involved in going yourself, to be involved in sending and encouraging those who you send, or to disobey God. Those are the only options as Christians if we're going to see the world as Christ sees it and be a part of what He's doing in the world. And this one more I really like too. And it's, "Come help us in Papua New Guinea." We could use the help. We could use the help in praying and even just being encouraged by you guys. There's so many things going on. We can't even begin to tell you. What are you doing? Are you praying? Are you helping? And are you giving? Now, surely you are. But I want to challenge you to look at the world as Christ does, and maybe we could do more. Will you go? I was once a person who was far away from God, hopeless life. And my family, if you knew my background, my mom was 13 when she got married. That's when she quit school. That was 7th grade. My dad quit school in 5th grade. Education was a big thing in my family. I'm the headmaster of a Bible college. I'm the director of a Bible college. And I came from such humble beginnings that you wouldn't think I would be able to do that. It's funny. I just think God has a sense of humor that He would take me and give me the kind of ministry that He has. It's awesome. And if He could do that with me, He could do that with any one of you. So I'm excited about this Romania trip. I think that's a great thing, a great option, and to get some more insight and continually to have our eyes on that harvest field. I think the next slide is going to be starting for Kelly's part. I'm going to have Kelly come up and talk just a little bit. We have a little brief presentation to explain a little bit about what's going on with our daughter, Abby. And I'm afraid if I push this button, it's going to get started. So I think it will the way we put it together. So.
I know. I said I won't push the button.
Oh, you won't push the button yet.
Can I use one of these? Or
is this one?
Or this?
You can speak right into it.
Okay. I'll use this one then. We should actually be in Papua New Guinea right now.
Can everybody hear?
Can you hear? Okay.
Here, look.
Okay. How's this one?
Does it need to be turned on?
I don't know. Does it have to be turned on? I'm sorry.
Let's do this.
We'll find one that is on.
What we'll do is we'll unplug this. And because that's unplugged, this will work just fine.
That's it.
Okay. Now you can hear me, because I can hear me. We should be in Papua New Guinea right now. We have already been here 16 months, I think, but God changed our plans. When we came home a year or 16 months ago, I was looking forward to a furlough. It had been a very hard term, like he said. There were just a lot of things that happened that just changed what our ministry was, people who had to leave the field for medical reasons, things like that, and just really changed and made things a lot harder while we were there the last time. So I was really ready for a break when we came home, and it's not necessarily easier to be home, but it's different, and it's away from the stresses that you sometimes go through when you're living overseas. But like I said, God changed our plan, and it wasn't very long after we were home on furlough that Abigail got sick. And I think some of you've talked to us, and you know what happened with her. She got necrotizing fasciitis, the flesh-eating disease, on her face. And we have been through a lot this year, but you know, the thing that always comes to our minds is that it's not all about us, and it's not all about our story with Abigail. But God has just been doing some amazing things. Like I said, on the field, we just went through a lot of things this last term. We had two of our missionaries on the field whose only sons died. Both of those sons were in America when they died. One of them was in his 20s. He's a soldier who had been in Iraq and survived Iraq. He was one of those guys who is in the Humvees with the gun. You know, he's the guy poking out the top.
Yeah.
And the one who gets targeted, and he survived Iraq, came back, and was killed in a motorcycle accident. Another one, it was a family who was supposed to take our place while we were on furlough, and their daughter got sick, and they had to come home, and they ended up staying because mom was going to have a baby, and so they stayed for that. And while they were home, their four-year-old son died. And just a real freak kind of disease that we don't even know exactly what it was, but he died while they were here. Both of those families have returned to Papua New Guinea and are there working right now. But that was hard. It changed our plans as a field for our plans as men. It changed our plans, but it was God's plan. But it made it hard. We also had other medical emergencies that happened. Another one of our families over there, their 6-month-old infant had medical problems that had to be medevaced. And so that changed plans. And two of our missionaries were in the bush and riding on a four-wheeler to a village and hit a rock in the grass and flipped them over. And they were both had to be medevaced to Australia. And so we just had a real hard term last time.
Every one of our families on the field had some sort of thing happen like this, except us and one other family. Yeah. So every other family on our field of missionaries was touched by some sort of, you know, catastrophe almost. And,
right. And when things happen to your colleagues, it's not like you just, you know, say, oh, well, you know, they can pick up the slack whenever they get back. Somebody has to do that work, which means you usually end up doing a little more work because somebody's got to keep the work going. So it was a hard term, and when we came home, I was so ready to come home and expecting to be able to have a change of pace for a year. And then, like I said, Abby got sick and got this necrotizing fasciitis and ended up in the hospital. And we just really feel, as we look back on it, that it's not just about us. It's about what's happening in Papua New Guinea. Things are just exploding over there. Like this big expansion program that we want to do at the Bible College, going from 70 students to 200 students. It's huge, and I don't think Satan wants us to do it. And he has been trying hard to get us down. But everybody who has been affected on the field, either medically or through a death or whatever, they have gone back to the field, and they are now working there. And so we just think it's really exciting to see what God has done. It's been hard this year to go through this, but Abby's had a tremendous attitude. Sometimes she gets up and gives her testimony, but we don't have time today to do all that stuff. But she just has had an incredible attitude and has said, you know, if God can use this so that people come to know him or even just get their lives right with him, that's okay with me.